Hey, everyone. Welcome to the latest podcast episode. This is your host, Terry Knight. And man, let me tell you, I'm very excited to have this man right here that I can relate to on many levels, Michael Zuber, man. And he's got 180 rental portfolio. In my eyes, he's a top real estate expert in my eyes. Because, I mean, the way he's done it, to the way he's scaled and to the way he's just helping others, I think he's doing it all the right way. And Michael, man, thank you so much for coming on, man. Appreciate it.
Terry, I appreciate the opportunity. I think, it doesn't seem like there's enough people that care about the W-2 employee, right? There seems to be a social media fixation on the entrepreneur, on the, you know, gotta be a billionaire, you know, gotta do all of these wild things. And you know what? There's certainly a different way. I don't know if it's necessarily better. I'll leave that to others to judge. But there's a different way, and I don't think it's talked about. And I think that's a huge shame because I think most of us are that person. It's like, you know what? I don't mind. You know, I want to use my job to build something on the side to retire early. I want to take care of my family. I don't want to be an entrepreneur whose first five businesses fail, right? Can you imagine, right? 30-year-old, got a family at home. You're going to burn the boats. You're going to go through five failed businesses before one hits. No, thank you. No, thank you. There's a different way. I think the W-2 employee needs to stop looking at their job as a prison, but look at it as the key to having everything you want. And, you know, we're trying to do that every day. So thank you for the opportunity.
Cool. No, thank you, Michael. So, I mean, first and foremost, let everyone know who Michael Zuber is, man. And let's kind of start from there.
Yeah. So I'm probably like a lot of people watching. I was raised to go to school, get a good job, climb the corporate ladder, work for 40 hours for 40 years to live on 40%. That was success, right? Bust your ass. Hopefully you live to 65 and, you know, you can retire and, you know, do a few things before you're gone. And I was well on my way. I went to school, got a job, got an MBA in the evenings. By the time I'm 30, I squirrel away $7,000. It's just, you know, that's all I can put away. I do get really lucky in that I'm, you know, old enough to experience the dot-com craze. So, Terry, I turned that $7,000 into about $200,000. And I was a baller. I was so cocky. I had more money at 30 than my family had ever had, which, you know, money is a stressor, you know, when I was growing up. So I had it and then I lost it. I stopped doing the work. I got arrogant. I got lazy. That $200,000 evaporated to $40,000 before I realized what was going on and got to cash. And that's the beginning of my story. I'm defeated. I lost more money than, you know, I lost $160,000, which is more money than my dad or mom made for 3 or 4 years combined, right? I lost that much in a couple of weeks, and I was so depressed. I thought I had it, then I lost it. And ultimately, I go to a bookstore. I find a purple book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and it highlighted things I'd never thought about. I never thought about rental properties. I never thought about the cash flow quadrant. I never thought about all these things. And it changed my life. I had an MBA. My first job was an accountant. I'm comfortable with numbers. And to think that Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad, Poor Dad opened the door to a whole new world is both awesome and insulting. It's insulting to the school system that this book kind of opens it up. So after reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you quickly realize that it's a mindset book, not a how-to book. So I go on a book reading binge, hundreds of books. Ultimately, I try to buy in my backyard. Doesn't work. I ended up buying in Fresno, California. My plan, Terry, at the beginning was four houses. I thought if I could get one house every 2 years, my retirement would be better. Ultimately, we got on the journey and did quite a bit more than that. But that was me, man. W-2 employee, busted my butt, 60 hours a week, lived below our means, something that, you know, I took away from my additional readings. Because that becomes that becomes the seed capital to grow. And that's the big thing about being a W-2 employee, right? You can bust your ass during the day, get bonuses, you know, commissions, whatever it is, raises. And then if you keep your lifestyle flat, that's where the magic happens. I really do believe, Terry, everybody talks about how much they make, but nobody talks about how much discretionary income. And that's the mistake. It doesn't matter how much you make, in my opinion. I know plenty of people that make 200 grand a year and are broke, just broke. And I know a couple people make 50 grand a year. They're fine. It's all about discretionary income. So the first thing I would tell the audience to do, you know, this week is calculate their monthly discretionary income, because that number has to grow if you want to be wealthy. If that number doesn't grow, you're just on a treadmill of going nowhere. But if you can grow discretionary income, you have something. So that's where it kind of starts.
Cool, man. Well said, Michael. So I want to kind of deep dive in. You said you spent, or you saved $7,000 and you grew that to $200,000. What did you do to get that jump?
I was in the stock market, right? So I had an MBA at the time. I was in the numbers. I was reading financial statements. I was reading earnings reports. I was being a steward of the game. And I was making what turned out to be decent investments. When you do that long enough, and then what happened is I started doing less work and making more money. What is obvious now in hindsight, but wasn't obvious when you were in it, everything was going up. The dot-com crash was my generation's crypto craze, right? We just went through a crypto craze or meltdown or whatever, where all these altcoins and Shibas and blah, blah, blahs were going to the moon. And some people made a killing if they sold, but most people lost their ass because they held. That was me. I didn't know it. I didn't realize we were in a dot-com bubble. But boy, did I feel cocky and arrogant and all of that. So I was buying and selling stocks, ended up day trading, and ultimately the market taught me a big lesson. If you don't do the work, you don't stay consistent, you don't have stop losses, you know, you don't manage risk, it'll eat your lunch, and I got got.
Definitely. That's a slap in the face, but it helps you kind of...
Slap in the face, kick in the ass, yeah, all that.
Yeah, all that stuff. But it helped you bounce back, right? So you had 40K left over. And what made you... You read the book, right? And you had 40K. You utilized that 40K for 4 rental properties or 3?
3, yeah. So the 40K was gone after the third purchase, yeah.
Okay, so that's like a great opportunity, right? Even back then, I would think, right? 40K, that's enough to get 3 properties. What went through your mind when you had to say, hey, I had to use my 40K to get 3 properties as a W-2, you know, employee?
We'll go to the first one. The first one, I took half that. I didn't know any better, right? I didn't know how to buy. So the first property I bought, Norris Drive, which people can go look up, 1818 Norris Drive East, 93703. So go look it up on Zillow. We buy for 107. I put 20% down. I didn't know any better. So let's just call it 20 grand. We do all the right things. We get a tenant inside. I remember, Terry, going to dinner, having some champagne, celebrating that we were on our way. Right? Because still at this point, dude, I got 1, we're going to 4, right? That's my vision at 30 years old, or probably 31 at the time. And the story's in my book in more detail, but basically what happens is we move tenants in, well-qualified, great couple, incomes, references, everything we did right. But what we didn't know is they were getting divorced. So literally the first month, they're there 2 weeks, the wife takes off, the husband is not happy. He becomes an alcoholic. He stops working. He never pays rent. And because we're in California, it took us 2 or 3 months to get him out. So we go back to this house, which we just celebrated buying. And now he's damaged it. And we spent $1,000 on attorney fees. And we have to spend 15 grand. We had to spend more money on the repairs after he left than we did when we bought it. Talk about a total kick in the, you know, you know what. And I was ready to quit, Terry. My entire story could have stopped that day when I walked into that house. Again, remember, it's probably 6 months since I realized that $160,000 loss. Now I'm staring at this house in a city, because I invested in a city, Terry, I knew nothing about. I didn't know anybody. Fresno, California is 2.5 hours away. I was like, oh, this sucks, blah, blah, blah. My wife, Olivia, gets all the credit in the world. She says, did we do anything wrong? I'm like, no, we didn't do anything wrong. There's no check on a rental application for you got to get divorced, right? That's not on no app I ever saw. And so she goes, okay, let's try it one more time. I'm like, you sure? She said, yeah, just do it one more time. So our story takes off from there. Next tenant moves in, never misses rent. Rents go up. If you look at the story, we ultimately sell that house for $260,000 like 3 years later. And we 1031 into an apartment building. So those first three houses we ended up getting, we sold at the peak because we knew they were unaffordable. And we 1031 to the units. So those three houses probably became, I don't know, 25 units or something. Because we didn't stay in houses. We got out of houses. Then they crashed. And the reason I want people to go look at that house on Zillow is we sold it 263. Like 3 years after that, it foreclosed at $75,000. My market went down 70%. 70%. So, yeah, pretty painful.
Yeah, that's crazy. Wow. Now, for people out there, Michael, 1031 exchange, can you kind of go through what that means?
Yeah, you can look it up on Google, but essentially it is one of the greatest real estate benefits. It allows you to take the equity from one asset and move it to what's called a like-kind investment. So simply said, I could sell a rental and buy a rental. There are all kinds of rules. It has to be done in a certain timeline, a certain size, all those things. Go look them up. But basically, I can take the equity out of an asset that is overpriced, move it into an asset that is underpriced, take all the profit and give the middle finger to the IRS. Right? That's the key, right? Because you don't get usually when you sell something and you buy something, you pay taxes. This doesn't happen, right? It goes through an intermediary and then it goes into the next asset. So it's really what the big, like, I'm trying to remember his name. He's out of Florida. Ben, why am I drawing a blank on his name? He's a big guy. He smokes. Ben Mala. Ben Mala's built his whole portfolio with 1031 exchanges. He buys a value add, fixes it up, sells it, moves to something bigger. It is what the big boys use to not pay taxes and to grow.
Yeah, that's the way to do it, definitely. So you did a 1031 to apartment homes. What was that experience like making that big jump, you know, from three to
again,
many?
Right? You don't know what you don't know. I assumed, again, incorrectly, that managing an apartment building would be like managing a single family home. It is not. A lot more turnover, a lot more headaches. You're essentially a counselor, right? In a single family home, generally speaking, you have one family unit who's responsible for the home. You go to an apartment building, you have 5, 10, 20, 100 people living very close together, and there is always drama. He's parking in my spot. They're playing their music too loud. Their kid is throwing rocks, blah, blah, blah. And it's just, and a lot more turnover, which I didn't know, right? And, you know, your expense structure is different. In an apartment building, you're responsible for some water, gardening. You know, if you're in the winter areas, probably snow removal, all of these things. And it's a different animal, right? So typically speaking, if you look at the lending landscape, 4 units and below is considered residential. Anything 5 and above is called commercial. And it's managing apartment buildings is not easy. It's a very different animal. Single family homes, way, way easier.
Yeah, I bet. And how much were you making once you acquired those apartment homes by then? Because you still work in W-2, right? And you just, you know, acquired many properties.
So when you say making, meaning my W-2 job, you mean gross income?
On the side with the apartment homes separately. Because so, you're hustling at that point.
Oh, yeah. Dude. So we, at the peak, at 2006, we had 8 homes. I would say the eight homes were producing, let's call it 1500 cash flow. From 2006 to 2007, we sell all of those eight homes and we 1031 into 80 units. So we 10X. 10X is a real thing. So we get those 80 units. Let's say we spend 6 months seasoning them, right? Getting tenants out, repairing, all of that. So we went from doing about 1,500 net cash flow to probably, it's hard. So that was 2010. It was probably 7,500, maybe $8,000 at the time. Those 80 units today, it's probably more like 25 or 28, something like that. Because again, rental inflation, mortgage pay down, things of that nature. But yeah, if we were to go back in the time machine, it was probably, let's call it eight. Let's call it $8,000.
Wow. So how did you do that though with a W-2 and managing 80 units? Because that's a side hustle, right? So how did you manage both? It's difficult, I would think.
The key is we had three, there were three pieces in the chain. Everybody had their job. My job, find deals, secure capital. My wife's job, Olivia, her job was to run the books, be the accountant, make sure nobody's stealing, making sure, you know, bills are getting paid. And then since day one, something I guess we haven't mentioned, I had a property manager. The market that I chose was so far away, and I had a job, Terry, that would take me out of the country every week. So we could not self-manage. So I was paying 10% management in the beginning. I think it went down to 8% when we had units. And we were paying a PM to be our face to the tenants. So the day-to-day stuff wasn't our problem, right? The day-to-day stuff was the PM's problem. So we essentially outsourced the most time-consuming and, frankly, least value-add part of the business. I was finding deals. I look for deals every day, right? I have this saying, you know, focus, daily discipline. It's been 26 years now since I started, I think. And I look for deals every day. And I'll do it again today. Just focus and discipline. But yeah, the real answer is we did enough deals that we paid a PM to do the work.
Gotcha. That's amazing, Michael. Wow. Like, and your W-2, I forgot to talk about that. I heard you were in sales, right?
Yeah, I started in accounting, went to consulting, ultimately spent the last 20 years, right, 18 years in sales. Yeah.
And you were like the top dog, like you're all about hammering and being the top competitor, right?
I ultimately got to be very good at what I did. And I worked in selling enterprise software is a highly competitive and highly lucrative business. It's full of sharks, full of the best of the best. And we had 90-day quotas and we could get fired. I mean, it was such a cutthroat business. We had this thing called QBRs and quarterly business reviews. And it was not uncommon for somebody to get fired on stage for not producing business. It was called a public execution. And of course, it was done by leadership to send a message to the audience like, hey, you know, this could be you kind of thing. And that was the high pressure world I lived in for, you know, I don't know, 10, 12 years. And yeah, you get really used to busting your ass and making it happen for sure.
Well, Michael, I think you had a good mental, way of kind of handling all that, man, because you're dealing with that and try to build your portfolio. So I don't know how you did that, but it just shows how strong and capable of you doing things when you put your mind to it, focus, and you kind of hammer away, like you mentioned.
I appreciate that. That was, you know, it's really funny. I didn't appreciate this until after I retired. I didn't even know it was a thing because it was just innate to me. But I have the ability to focus and just do the work. It's why I'm a good employee and I'm a horrible entrepreneur, right? You give me a task, I do that task, and I don't look up until the task is done. And, oh, by the way, the really sick part is, I like doing the task, right? This whole entrepreneur, like, you know, you got to run a business, hire people, do all this. That is not me. That just screams risk, And, you know, it's just really weird. I'm a good employee. I am not an entrepreneur. And it's really funny when I hear folks like Gary Vee and, you know, all these other folks, Cody Sanchez now, and all these folks talking about becoming an entrepreneur, buy a business, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, it's not that easy, man. Why don't I just bust my ass during the day, make some money, save money, grow my discretionary income, take these stacks of paper, go buy some assets, the assets appreciate, and then in a couple of decades, I'm rich as hell. I'm going to do that. I'm just going to do that. That seems easier to me.
A safe approach, definitely. I get exactly what you
it's
mean.
It's certainly a proven, I mean, it's a proven approach. You make money, you save money, you invest money, you do that for a decade, you're rich. It's that simple, right? It's a decade, folks. Look at your job as a tool to get wealthy in a decade. Don't believe this get rich quick nonsense. You know, you got scammed on buying some stupid crypto coin, blah, blah, blah. Dude, make money, save money, invest money, do it for a decade, you're going to be rich. And I want to go back to the save money because I want people to hear this. We live in the Silicon Valley where people make six figures, and the keeping up with the Joneses is real, right? It's wild. And my wife and I sacrificed for 15 years. What does that mean? No new cars, no crazy vacations, never upgraded our home, never remodeled our home. One of the hardest days of my life, it's in the top 10, but it's one that I remember because it's part of this journey. We go to a housewarming party, which, you know, people get a new house, they welcome people over to celebrate, right? This housewarming party, Terry, is for an employee of mine, right? So he reports to me, right? I'm the boss, he reports to me. He has a nicer house in a nicer part of town. I live in a freaking condo, and I remember going to that, blah, blah, blah. Driving home, Terry, I had to pull over. I started crying because we're like 10 years into our journey, and I don't know if it's going to work. I've asked my wife, Olivia, and my daughter, Teresa, to sacrifice for 10 freaking years, and this guy, he seems to have it all. What I, of course, didn't know is he's mortgaged up to his eyeballs, and he's going to have to work till he's 90. And, you know, I retired 4 years later. But that day was a hard day because for a moment, I lost sight of what we were supposed to be doing, right? We were building something to be financially free, and we were close, right? We were getting there. We were not about mortgaging our future, right? Once he signed that note on that $1.5 million house, his chances of retirement were zero. You know, some people are comfortable doing that. I wasn't. So it's pretty wild to think about.
That's pretty deep, man. So you pulled over, you had that moment, even with your family. What made you keep going, though? Like, what made you kind of pull through and said, let's get back on track?
This is why your spouse, your significant other, has got to be on board. You're on this journey together. So first and foremost, Olivia drove us home because I was in no place to drive. So she drove us home. And we talked. And she's like, you know, she showed me where we were. She's like, do you know what we have now? Do you see what's coming in each month? Because again, my job, as I told you earlier, was find deals and secure capital. She ran the books. I wasn't looking at the books. So she took some time and showed me where we were. And I instantly felt better because I'm like, really? We've got that now? Because to your point, right? My head was down doing work. I was trying to be the best of the best during the day. In the evening, I was trying to find the deal. I wasn't looking at the books. I trusted her explicitly to do the books. And she just showed me where we were. And I, you know, of course, I felt 1,000 times better. And I could see the finish line, even though I knew we weren't there, but I could see it for the first time. I'm like, oh, honey, we're almost there. This is going to get good. So yeah, she had to shine the light because I just needed to know that it was working, and she showed me that.
Exactly, man. I think the spouse is very important. I rely on my spouse every single day. So absolutely. Kudos to our wives. You know, they're like, you know, the backbone of the family. So
amen.
So what? So you went from 80 units, Michael, and you went up to 100 since then. Like, how did that happen? Like, what was that journey like?
Yeah, so we got to the peak of 06. That was when my market peaked and rolled over. We had 80 units. Then the market went bonkers, right? That house I sold for 260 goes for 75. So I didn't know. I knew it was going to fall. That's why we sold. But I didn't think it would fall that much. I got to tell you, I didn't know. So we started buying houses. So the first house I think we bought after the crash was like about 150. So it was about half off. I'm like, wow, 50% off? Sure, I'll take one of those. And then we bought one at 120, 80, 75. And it, you know, just kept going down and down and down. So we found a way to do what today is called BRRRR, right? I was a featured blog writer on Bigger Pockets in like 05 or something, 06. And I started doing what now is called BRRRR. We would buy a dump with hard money. We would fix it up. Then we would refi it with private money, right? So we had friends and family lend us millions of dollars paying 10% interest. And we just kept buying houses. We were buying houses a couple a month for a while. And then we started buying units. And ultimately, what people don't really realize is we started buying apartment buildings. So in the Great Recession, houses crashed first. Multifamily, like duplexes through quads, crashed next. And then apartment buildings crashed next. So we added probably 50 or 60 apartment units at the bottom. Some bought directly from banks, some bought through foreclosure. So yeah, we were aggressive. And we borrowed millions and millions of dollars from private investors. And we grew from that. So we paid 10 to 12% interest. But because we were buying them so cheap, they cash flowed. Now, you know, turn around, we look like geniuses. We've since refied out of all that 12% money into 5 and 6% money. So cash flow explodes. We've had a lot of rental inflation. So the short story is we didn't get stuck with houses. Because if we were stuck with 8 houses when it all crashed, we would have been effed. But we got into apartments. And then we had the ability, because we made some good choices, to raise millions of dollars in private capital to keep growing and growing and growing. So that was how.
Cool, man. That's amazing. So what do all that, 180 by then. When did you decide to retire? Because as a W-2 employee out there, people love that word, right?
Oh, yeah. It's awesome. So the first thing we did was it was always important for me for my wife to retire first. So the first thing we did is we ran a trial year. So we basically said, hey, honey, change your direct deposit to this other account. Have all of your W-2 go there, and we'll see if we can live just on rentals and my income. So we did that for a year. The answer was yes, we could. So she retired quickly. So I think she retired in, what year is it, 24? So she probably retired in 2012, maybe 2013. And my intention was to work till I was 50. Unfortunately, and it's, I want, let me be clear. I wanted to work till I was 50 because of my ego. I love my job. At this point, I was the man. I had done something that very few people had. I'd taken 3 products from 0 to 100 million. Very few people have done one. A couple of people have done 2, and there's not many people that have done that 3 times. I'm one of those. So I was full of myself. Huge ego, just all about myself. And ultimately, at 45, I close out a sales year. I kill it. I'm going to club, making a bunch of money again. And management decides to give me a patch, a product, and a team that I don't like. And it feels vindictive, right? Again, I have a huge ego. I'm probably a huge dick at this point. And management is trying to put me in my place. Because I just got my third product to 100 million, right? That was like, like Q4, we did it. We got 100 million. And they put me in my place. I knew that. And I'm in the room. Because every year in a sales guy, you get a new plan. It's called a plan, right? And I'm looking at this plan. I never sit down, Terry. I never sit down. And I tell them, it's weird. I still remember the flash. I'm like, I don't want any of this. And then I remember thinking, I don't need this. So I told them very frankly, we are going to work out what's called a package where I leave. Today's my last day. I will say nice things about you and you will say nice things about me, right? It's an agreement. They're shocked a little. I think they knew that was coming because, again, my boss hated me. I find this out after the fact. He hates me. He's jealous. He's a total little – never mind. So he got what he wanted. I was no longer a part of his organization. I am now out. He could tell people, I'm sure, that he fired me or whatever he wants to say. We agree to part ways. I have to say nice things about the company, and they have to say nice things about me. I get a check for leaving quietly, and I'm retired, just like that. I remember kissing my wife, Olivia, going, I can't wait to get my next quota and patch, to being home 45 minutes later, retired, just that fast.
Oh, wow.
But here's the problem, Terry. This is a huge problem. I did not retire to something. I retired in a moment's notice without a plan. The money was good. I was good.
Yeah.
But I didn't have a mission. As we've talked about earlier, I'm comfortable doing the work. I thrive doing the work. I'm an egotistical, arrogant son of a gun with a track record. Good. But now I got nothing to do. So I was happy for about 2 or 3 days. And then it's probably the worst 3 weeks of my life. I get increasingly depressed because I have no mission. I have nothing to do. I'm not contributing. You can only call your friends so often at 10 o'clock and say you just woke up from a nap to make them jealous before that gets old and they don't take your calls. So yeah, dude, I retire fine financially, but I had nothing. I had no mission. And that was eye-opening. Please don't do that. Make sure you have a plan. That's one of the things I'm big about telling W-2 employees is, hey, you're on a mission. You're living below your means. You're buying assets. Also start something on the side so that you can roll right into something, whether it's a podcast or a book or teaching or, shoot, coaching soccer. I mean, it doesn't have to be a lot, but it's got to be something. And it took me a couple of months to figure that out. But, yeah, it was the worst part of my life, that 3 or 4 week period. It was horrible. I remember generally a positive person. And I had let's call it a month where I was like, I was not fun to be around. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the worst thing for the whole family, including you. So it took months, but what made you figure out your passion or your plan?
So again, right. I'm really good at what I do. I had job offers left, right, and center.
Oh yeah.
I remember I went to a couple of conversations. I never called them interviews because I didn't want to go back to work. I didn't have to. So I just called them conversations. But I remember sitting at my kitchen table Saturday morning. It's about the end of the month. And I am unhappy. I remember a flash again in my head going, if you don't get out of this by Monday, you're going to take one of those jobs just to stop being miserable. And I remember once I heard that to myself, saying essentially, what a total loser. What a loser. You spent all this time, you sacrificed all this stuff, you struggled, you're here, and you're going to go get a job because you freaking can't find something to do? What a loser. So that was enough to slap me around. And ultimately, I realized the first thing I need to do is I need to write a book. I was like, hey, go back to the beginning. You read Rich Dad Poor Dad after losing all that money, and you're here now. Nobody has ever written a book from the moment of reading Rich Dad Poor Dad to finishing the work. At this point, it's 15, 16 years. So Michael, write the book. And Terry, I am a horrible, I was never a good student. English was my worst subject. So writing is hard for me. If you can go on Twitter or Instagram and follow me. I misspell words. I use word the wrong. I mean, dyslexia is a pain.
And I'm the same way.
It's just horrible. But I decide I have to write a book because nobody has ever written a book, right? How many people have read Rich Dad Poor Dad and changed their life? But nobody's read a book that said, hey, I read Rich Dad Poor Dad, I did this for 15 years, and this is how it turned out. So I'm like, you got to write that book. And you know the sick thing? I wrote the book in about 6 weeks. I don't need the money, right? So I give it away. I give it away as a PDF. I give it away to, I don't know, 1,000 people. And like 12 people read it. I'm like, damn, people don't like free. What is wrong with people? Do they not understand the value in this free PDF? So ultimately, after getting some coaching, it's like, Zuber, having a PDF is stupid. Go get a book. Go to Amazon. Oh, no, by the way, go pay an editor $5,000 to, you know, edit the book, you freaking idiot, because you can't write. So ultimately, I do that. I pay an editor. We go through that whole process. Editing a book is hard. Writing a book is easy. Editing a book is hard. Ultimately publish it on Amazon, and it's a wild success. It's tens of thousands of copies sold. It's on Audible, 1,500 book reviews, 5-star reviews. People read it. It's like, I just looked today, it sold 30 copies last week, which is really hard for a self-published book that's been around for like 4 years, 5 years. So wildly successful. So that journey got me fun. Then I realized I could go on YouTube. Right, you can go back on YouTube and watch my first video sitting on my couch in my purple polo shirt saying, I have no idea what I'm going to do, but we're going to talk about real estate every day. And sure enough, I did a YouTube video every day for 3.5 years, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. I now have grown that to doing 4 or 5 videos a day, 7 days a week. I have a millionaire staff of people that talk to us every week. And so my mission now is to help folks understand that being a W-2 employee, you can get somewhere. And you know, the really crazy thing, Terry, is I work 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. And everything else is just scheduled. And that's enough for me to feel like I'm contributing. So one rental at a time saved me from getting a job. That's the short answer.
Well, I love that, man, because I think your passion really translated and helped out a lot of people in between. And it's funny you mentioned your book. I was going to talk about that too. But yes, your book is awesome. And on top of that, just the fact that you took 6 weeks out of your time to kind of craft that and get it all from your head into a paper. A lot of people don't want to do that. But like, your experience, your knowledge is so important. And I think even Ryan Pineda say this, like, if you keep stuff to yourself, you're selfish. You know, if you don't share it out and help others, then you're really being selfish. So I think you did a great job doing that, hands down.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
For like your book, right? So it took 6 weeks. You dropped that. You said you sold 30 books last week, and this is just all just organic, right?
Yeah. I want the ads. Never paid for an ad. Yeah.
And that's what I'm trying to say. Like, guys out there, like, if you want to be an entrepreneur or if you're already one and you're trying to build content and a brand, Michael is like the perfect person to learn from and to actually learn from what he did. I think you said on one podcast, you made over 11,000 videos to date, I think.
Yeah, we're at 12,000 now. Yeah,
12,000 now. Yeah. Wow. So like, you're all about focus. And I think what a lot of people do is they try something, yes. They try something and they stop. I'm one of those people. I'm not going to lie. But like, I need to like craft out like what Michael's doing and kind of take his approach and just keep hammering every single day. Three, four videos a day.
Here's the key about the videos. A lot of people want perfection. A lot of people overthink thumbnail, keywords, you know, fancy camera angles, blah, blah, blah. I still to this day, 5 years later, don't worry about any of that stuff. I worry about the content. The funny thing about creating 12,000 videos is zero videos are edited. I don't edit any of them. In fact, I go live at 7:30 a.m. to do a daily show, daily financial news. You can go watch it. I mess up all the time. And, you know, some people like it. Some people are like, hey, you moron, what are you doing? That's okay. You know, you want the highly produced stuff? Go somewhere else. I'm going to be who I am, and that's okay. Like we said earlier, I'm okay doing the work. I have fun every day. I have fun having this conversation. After this, I have 8, 8:30, 9, 9:30, 10 interviews, 30 minutes each with people who just started. Those are fun conversations. And, you know, I'll be done by 11 o'clock today. I'll schedule those videos out probably one a day for the next 4 or 5 days. And I'm off with my life. I'll go have lunch with the wife. I'll work out. I'll take a nap if I want, if I'm tired. Dude, I have a saying, every day is Saturday to me. But it's pretty awesome. But yeah, just do the work, man. Stop overthinking it. Set up, like, one of the things I just started, like I did this morning. I did this before. Like, we started our discussion at 7 a.m. Pacific time.
Mm. Yep.
One of the things I wanted to do to show my audience is I'm tracking weekly goals. Right? I have a yearly goal, but I break them down into activities. This is exactly how I grew something from zero to 100 million three times. Is you take the big goal, you break it down into a series of steps or activities, and then you track those activities every week and you report on them. So the first thing I did this morning is I collected my weekly numbers, I turned on my camera, and I recorded going through my Excel spreadsheet because it's important for me to show the audience that I am who I am and that they can do this stuff too. So that video goes live, I think, at 11 a.m. Pacific. What is it, Sunday? Sunday. So I just want to live by example, right? Do the work, live by example. So just break it down what you want to do and then just get after it.
Yeah, I think, Michael, I think you're probably one of the only few that do that that I know of, and I like to take that approach as well. But I don't even set weekly goals, so I'm slacking. But I think you hold yourself accountable. I think you hold yourself accountable, and it helps you keep on track, definitely. So I really love that.
If you want to do amazing things, they don't just happen. You want to grow a portfolio to 200 units, it doesn't just happen. You want to grow a YouTube channel to 50,000? It doesn't just happen. You want to make $1 million in a brand without any advertising? It doesn't just happen. You want to write a book? It doesn't just happen. Right? You want to write a book? Here you go. Set up a pro. This is how I wrote One Rental at a Time in about 6 weeks. I broke it down into steps. Okay, great. What are the chapters? What are some of the titles? What's the journey look like? Okay, so that's like 10 days. Okay, now you're going to take one of these topics and you're going to write 4 pages. You're going to write 5 pages. And, you know, 4 or 5 weeks later, you got 150 pages of material. All right, now I got to get an editor. Oh, shit, how do I find an editor? Well, you go out, you search, you ask for references. You find three, you get two, you get one, done. Oh, shit, I need a cover. Oh, let's go get a Fiverr and get an artist. Just do the next thing. Just do the next thing.
Yeah, just do. Don't think about it. And I totally agree with you. Yeah, baby steps is the way to go. Stop overthinking. So Michael, like, dang, man, like, I think your whole story is just amazing. And I think even since you retired, because I want to be transparent with that too, is you retired on your own terms and you're able to, you know, keep building your portfolio and be an entrepreneur, whether you believe that or not, which you're 100% is. what's those numbers looking like? Exactly. Well, I think you're doing well, man. Yeah, and I know you say you're still trying to figure things out, but I think you're doing a great job.
Oh, yeah.
But what's those numbers looking like, right? Like, you transition to being an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. You're building a business. You know, you're building your brand one rental at a time. What does that portfolio digital part look like?
Yeah, I don't mind sharing those numbers. I think it's important, right? Again, all this started – so – YouTube in 2022, I made 80 grand AdSense. Just so people know, revenue's down in 2023, we would make basically 60K. So we're down 25%. Totally okay. But those are the numbers there. Book sales, call it 20 grand a year-ish, something like that. Course sales, six figures, you know, low six figures, say call it 100. 110, something like that. Affiliate links and referrals, I don't know, call that 50K, something like that. I don't know, call miscellaneous swag and other stuff probably 10 grand. I don't know. I don't know what it is. Call it 300 maybe, something like that.
Cool, man. Like, and that's just all organic, guys. Like, Michael's not doing any ads, or he's building his brand. Like, the long way, the long term, the proper way, and in my opinion, right? And he's putting out content that he wants. So, I mean, kind of reflect on that on YouTube.
Here's the key, Terry, to all of this, right? So a lot of people talk gross. Let's just call it 300 between friends. What you just said, most people probably missed. A lot of people out there have a social media presence. They have teams. They're doing ads. So their 300 probably nets them 25 or 50.
Yep.
My 300, so this is what I pay for. I pay for somebody to do thumbnails. I pay for somebody to take content and put it on a podcast because all my videos are stripped. I basically try to use what I have in multiple places. So I have about, let's call it $4,000 in expenses for stuff I don't want to do. So take $4,000 times 12, call it 40, call it 50. So, you know, my gross of 300 nets 250, right? Because I don't do ads, because I have no employees. I don't want employees. That's why I don't call myself an entrepreneur. I have a couple of 1099s that do very specific tasks that I will never do. And oh, by the way, I didn't hire those people until long after I needed them, right? I didn't have my first 1099 until, I don't know, I made multiple six figures. And I'm like, you know what? I really should have some cool thumbnails. So let's go find somebody and pay them to do that. But yeah, you don't need, dude, I did 1,000 videos for my phone. Only my phone.
Oh wow. Okay.
Right? You don't stop. Oh, I gotta buy this fancy $5,000 camera and this $2,000 lens and I gotta have 17 lights and, you know, a microphone and I gotta have a mixer and I'll forget about it. I did 1,000 videos with my freaking phone. Yeah. Just go. Stop making excuses.
1,000 from your phone, and I think people make excuses as well. So you made 1,000 off your phone. How many subscribers did it took you to get, or videos did it take you to get to, I don't know, like 10,000 subscribers? It took a while, right?
Well, yeah, I did. Well, I think the real question is how long did it take you to get monetized? I did 1,250 videos before I made a penny.
Oh, no, my ads. Gosh.
1,250. Like, how many people do 10 videos? They don't get monetized and they quit. I did 1,250 videos before I was monetized.
And that's dedication, man. And I think that's why people need to learn from you.
You know, the real sad part, Terry, is I didn't even know monetization was a thing. Like, you see Graham Stephan and me, Kevin, doing these videos. How much money I made? I'm like, what are these guys talking about? I was doing it for a different reason, right? I think when you go to YouTube, you have a choice. And you have to make this choice day one. If you're going to YouTube to make money, fine. There's a way to do that. Or you go to YouTube to have impact. I've been all about impact since day one. The money happens by accident, organically. But if you want to go to YouTube and make money, I'll tell you how. Go trend surf. Go to CNN or CNBC or MSNBC, whatever the scary headline is. Do a video on that scary headline every day. You will grow like a weed. People love fear. Be a crash bro. Be a doomer. Sell your soul for a penny a click. There's a guy who has pretty charts on YouTube who has been wrong for 5 years in a row, but he makes $80,000 a month. If you want to sell your soul, go for it. Not my thing.
That's crazy. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. I have this thing called vidIQ so I can look into other channels and see what they're making. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a complete doomer, idiot, owns nothing, and he's giving out real estate advice. I mean, really? Why are we so – like you're listening to a renter giving you investing advice? Really? And, oh, by the way, this guy's making $80,000 a month? It's like people are weird, man. You got to be careful who you follow. That's for sure.
Yeah, guys, definitely. You need to follow Mike Zuber. definitely, hands down. Michael, what's your plans, man, for 2024? We're in a new year. You know, what's your plan for this year and the upcoming years?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. So it's funny. I actually probably surprised a lot of people. I was between Christmas and New Year's, I always self-reflect, which I think a lot of people do. And 2023 was a pretty terrible year for me personally, which is probably hard for people to realize because, you know, I did some cool stuff. I spent a month in Asia. I spent 3 weeks in Europe. I bought a crazy ass second home. I was busy. I helped a lot of people, but I personally didn't grow. I was comfortable. I didn't take on any big challenges. Now, in hindsight, I talked to my mentors and they're like, you probably just needed a year to, you know, you've been going so hard for so long. Give yourself some grace, right? You still did amazing things, but you didn't grow. So 2024 is about growth. So what am I doing? I haven't gone to a lot of events as an attendee. So I'm going to go to some cool events. Like one of them I'm going to go to is Sean Connell's Think Media event in April. I already bought my VIP ticket. I'm going to go to that. I might be going to Ryan Pineda's WealthCon in April because it's kind of the same timing. I may go back to back. I'm going to run a marathon. I'm over 50, and the longest I've ever run is 13.1 miles. I'm going to try to run a marathon. I should say I'm going to finish a marathon. I doubt I run the entire thing. I'm sure there will be some walking involved. Let's just be honest with each other. But I'm going to finish the damn thing. And I want to grow. I want to challenge myself to, you know, feel like I've accomplished some cool stuff in 24. So that's it in a nutshell. And the beauty of this is if you want, go to my YouTube channel, One Rental at a Time. And you can watch my progress. I'm going to report every Sunday. How's it going? Some weeks are bad. Some weeks are good. And again, just hold yourself accountable to the activities and, you know, it should end in some good results.
Exactly. Being transparent. That's pretty cool, man. For Michael, for anyone that wants to reach out to you, man, to learn from you, get mentorship, coaching, all that good stuff. What's the best way for that?
The one thing I've done right is everything I do is one rental at a time. Books, website, Instagram, Twitter. And again, I put out a lot of free stuff on YouTube. If you want to do me anything, buy my book. It's $15. I do have courses and whatnot, but you know, most of you should just watch the free stuff and, you know, save the money, do the work. So yeah, just watch, subscribe on YouTube. It's free.
Cool guys. You heard it first. I'll have the links and stuff below. And Michael, man, appreciate you for having the time, but I have one last question that I like to ask all my guests. I don't ever remember the question, but it's what keeps you going every day when you want to give up? Whether that was you in the beginning of time, even now, whatever you think.
It's really funny. I now call it a superpower. I'm always excited to do the work and I'm excited for tomorrow and I don't look back. So I never have the woulda, coulda, shouldas. I'm like, okay, this is where we are. This is how we go forward. And then a couple of the dark days, right? I told you about one in this interview. It's nice to have a spouse that you can lean on. Mm-hmm. And, you got to have a mission, Terry. You got to know where you're going. Is your mission financial freedom? Great. Is your mission to change millions of lives? Great. Just have that mission, that North Star, track activities to get to it. And one day at a time.
Cool. I like that. One day at a time and one rental at a time by Michael Zuber.
There you go.
Cool, man. Well, thank you, Michael. Thank you so much for coming on, man. Guys, if you need to reach out, let me know. I'll direct you to him. But yeah, man, thanks again. Until the next episode. Peace out.
Peace.